This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. Maybe we should start the episode.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm Matthew. So now I have to stop and, and remind myself which one I am.
I'm Molly.
You're Squeako. And this is Spilled Milk, the show where we pico something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Yeah. Today we're talking about pico de gallo. Which I'm eating right now. I'm so sorry.
Yes, I made some. I brought it to the park. We're having a little pico picnic in the park. And why should we go down memory lane?
Let's go down memory lane. I'm going to start it off because my memory lane is really short. It's like a very shallow cul-de-sac.
Okay. There's going to be a lot of chip crunching during this episode.
So I think that I didn't really understand what pico de gallo was as like its own thing until recently, until I learned of your love for pico de gallo. I think that for me growing up, I just thought of pico de gallo as like the chunky salsa. That would come with chips sometimes in a Tex-Mex restaurant.
Yeah.
And then as I got a little bit older, and, you know, I should have known better by this point, but I didn't. I thought of it as the chunky salsa, like, you know, at a Mexican restaurant where you get to, like, go up to, like, the salsa bar and choose your own salsas. I still thought of it just as the chunky one.
Well, I think, like, when salsa started to become a popular condiment throughout the U.S. in the early 80s, that pico de gallo and, like, the cooked salsa that sort of starts as pico de gallo and then ends up kind of mushier in a jar, like, was synonymous with salsa.
Yes.
Because
I feel better about myself now.
No, I think you're good. Like, my memory, like, and I didn't realize this was pico de gallo at the time, was when I was growing up, my dad loved salsa and introduced me to salsa, and his favorite was Dean's brand salsa, which I don't think exists anymore, but used to buy it at, you know, Nature's or something in Portland, and it was in a plastic tub in the refrigerator case, and it was a pico de gallo. And it he would get the hot, and it was kind of how I first learned to like spicy food, I think.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. So then fast forward to 2020, maybe you remember it. Last year, we were getting a CSA box, and we got some fresh tomatoes in the CSA box. And I'm like, I'm not really like just kind of a slice and eat tomatoes kind of person. What am I going to do with these? But I don't want to cook them either.
I don't even understand how we're friends.
I know you're a slice and eat tomato person. You're wearing a t-shirt right now that says slice and eat tomato person.
No, I'm not. But I'm pretty sure that if you were to open up my intestines right now, you would find that there were still slice and eat tomatoes in there from my dinner. Well, actually, maybe not.
Okay, I know. I guess a couple nights ago, and they're still in slices in your intestines. Like
something's gone wrong.
speaking of which, public service announcement: I got my first ever colonoscopy last week.
Did they find any slice and eat tomatoes
in the post-visit summary, they said, like, you really eat a lot of tomatoes, huh? No, that would be false. and like the thing, like it's not a great experience, but everything was fine, and it's over now. And if you're of the age that you should do it so you can be miserable for a couple days like I was. And the thing I realized afterwards is my digestive tract was as empty as it's ever been in my life.
Yeah.
And so I was so hungry, not only so hungry, but I felt like I could eat an unlimited amount of food and not get full for about a day and a half. And it was awesome.
That's how I felt when I was breastfeeding.
Yes, that makes sense.
God, yeah, no, it was so fun. But I do remember thinking to myself, huh, when I'm not breastfeeding anymore, like, am I going to go back to normal? Like, how will I recalibrate?
No, like, I unfortunately went back to normal after, like, 36 hours.
So disappointing.
I know, it was very disappointing.
Okay, but anyway, slice and eat tomatoes.
That's right. We were in the middle of a story before we, like, took a colon detour. So we got these, kind of beefsteak tomatoes, and I'm like, you know, I just make these into salsa, like a pico de gallo, and so I just, like, Googled pico de gallo recipe and basically learned, like, you don't need a recipe. You chop up some tomatoes and green chilies and onion and salt and lime juice and toss them together and let them sit in the fridge for a couple hours. And it was fantastic. And I was like, I had made this before, but not in many years. I'm like, why did I stop making this? And I've been making it ever since. This one we've got today, I got all the stuff from Alvarez Farm with,
ooh,
like, jalapenos.
You went to the farmer's market and everything.
Yeah, they didn't have serranos yet, which is my preferred chili for pico de gallo. So I got jalapenos. You never know with jalapenos how much heat they're going to have. These had none.
Yeah, it's just so mild.
So
this is like more mild than mild.
I know. Yeah, I put in a bunch of jalapenos. So you get the chili flavor and color, but not much heat. But I like it anyway.
Okay. So what is this stuff? What are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What are we chewing about?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God.
Oh, I got a cilantro leaf stuck in my roof of my mouth.
I broke off my chip.
Oh, boy.
This is a problem with pico de gallo.
Well, I mean, it's the chips we like, the Juanitas, like, they're not a super sturdy chip. Mm. That's kind of not their style.
Mm.
So, I mean, you can get...
They're really shattery chip.
Yeah, which gives them great, like, crunchy mouthfeel. Don't you love it when people say mouthfeel?
I know you love it when people say mouthfeel. Go on.
Okay, so pico de gallo is a salsa that goes by many names, many aliases. In Mexico, it's often called salsa cruda or salsa fresca, which means raw salsa or fresh salsa, or salsa mexicana or salsa bandera, which bandera is flag because it has the colors of the Mexican flag. And some of these terms can also refer to a pureed or finely minced salsa with the same ingredients, but it's typically pretty chunky. And the classic ingredients are ripe tomatoes, onions, serrano chile, lime juice, salt, cilantro, and often cumin or oregano or other spices or herbs. I put a little garlic powder in because I like garlic powder. Ever since... We had, like, a sponsor years ago that sent us a bunch of garlic powder, and ever since then I've been really, like, use garlic powder a lot more than I used to. Do you remember this?
Maybe I gave you all the garlic powder because I just have a whole bunch of dillweed and turmeric.
You're a dillweed.
It literally says dillweed on the bottle. Who does that?
I know we talked about this before, but isn't dillweed just, like, the most fun thing to say? It's the best insult?
It is an amazing insult.
It's like...
Oh, I just got a spicy bit of jalapeno.
Oh, finally. I knew it was in there somewhere.
Mm.
The name pico de gallo means rooster's beak. And there's no, like, it's a term that goes way back, and there's no clear-cut etymology for it. Like, I read in many places on the internet that it's because people used to eat it by pinching pieces of it between their thumb and forefinger like a bird's beak.
Oh, they served it in preschool to allow you to work on your pincer grip.
The pincer grip comes up a lot on this show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or that it resembles bird food. I do not think either of those is correct.
No.
It is most likely a reference to the shape of the serrano chili because... it's common around the world for like curved thin chilies to be called bird related names. One other possibility: the verb picar in Spanish means to dice and to be spicy, so that's probably related.
So chicken spice,
rooster spice
is what this is called.
Yeah. So, there are variations throughout Mexico, as you might imagine. The one that really grabbed me that I have not had but would love to try is in the Yucatan. It's made with bitter orange juice and habanero chilies.
Next Spilled Milk Corporate Retreat.
To the
Yucatan.
Absolutely. Uh-huh. Let's do it. Let's find that crater where the asteroid hit that killed the dinosaurs.
Oh, was that in the Yucatan?
Yeah.
Mm.
I think that's the leading theory. I mean, we can crack the case once and for all.
Okay.
Let's talk about a little bit of pico de gallo history. Like, I didn't really dig up a whole lot. But so salsa, including salsas made with tomatoes and chilies, goes back to Aztec civilization. But onions and garlic are a product of European contact. So the pico de gallo that we know today probably dates from, like, the 16th or 17th century.
Okay.
But there would have been similar salsas before that. But in the U.S., like, this style of salsa was little known outside of Mexican-American communities and Texas, basically, in before the 80s, which is very hard to believe, right?
Really?
Yeah.
So you mean our parents lived in an era that was, like, maybe pico de gallo-less?
Yeah, no, I think like, my parents in, you know, living in New York City in the 60s probably never ate salsa unless they went to a Mexican restaurant. It was not something that, and I don't even know
that
if they
would just, like, pick up at the grocery store.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's basically it. I mean, it's one of these things that is, like, an obvious dish, I think. Like,
yes.
You know, like, many, like, you know, spice blends around the world, or, like, you know, sauces or chunky things around the world. Chunky things around the world. That's our new our new segment. chunky things around the world.
I was thinking that pico de gallo, or really any type of salsa, is kind of another example of the old what grows together goes together adage, right? I mean, we've got tomatoes, we've got peppers, we've got cilantro. I guess onions grow with those things. But, I mean, especially peppers and tomatoes do very well in the same climate.
Yeah, and, I mean, honestly, you know, I love the onion chunks. I put red onion in mine. But if you made this without onions and garlic, it would still be completely delicious, especially if you threw in a ton of lime juice.
Yes. Okay, so hold on. You said that you used to make this in your food writing days. I thought you just started making this last year.
Well, no, I used to make it sometimes many years ago.
Oh.
I think I made it from, like, a Cook's Illustrated recipe that, in retrospect, I don't think is very good.
Okay.
Partly because, like, I don't think you want to use the food processor for this. I think it kind of, you know, lacerates the vegetables in a way that is not ideal.
Well, and I think especially if you're using onion, I mean, there is a lot of documentation about the way that different approaches to slicing or chopping onion, like, breaks more or fewer cell walls.
I think that's it.
Which leads to more or less onion flavor, or different types of onion flavor.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, a good pico de gallo, it retains, like, the integrity of the original ingredients and melds the flavor together. And,
yes,
like, you get too much melding and not enough integrity with the food processor, I think.
Yes, I agree.
Too much variation in chunk size.
Yes. I mean, unless you stop the food processor constantly and scrape down the sides.
Yeah, but, like,
who does that?
Every time I do that, you know what happens? I lacerate my spatula.
Oh, my spatula is so messed up from my doing that.
Can you tell I learned a new word, lacerate?
Is this, like, the third time you've used
it? I think so, yeah.
Okay. So when do you make pico de gallo as opposed to, like, a roasted tomato salsa?
So roasted tomatillo salsa is absolutely my favorite salsa, and I make it at least every 2 weeks.
Wow,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because, like, we'll have, like, tacos or taco salad or chilaquiles or burritos for dinner, like, at least once a week, and, like, I will try and make a homemade salsa to go with that.
Wow.
It's so simple to make.
I know, but, like, I just served my family, like, tacos last night, and totally used store-bought fresh salsa.
You know what? You fucked up. Your family hates you now. They're not going to tell you, but there's going to be an intervention when you get home today.
I'm going to get home and the house is going to be empty. They will have both moved out.
That's right.
Even though June's, like, at summer camp today.
Yeah, look at Alice. Alice is turning her back on you.
She's like,
I can't believe when you pulled out that tub of store-bought salsa, like, I thought I knew you.
Yeah. Okay.
No, store-bought salsa is totally fine. I just, I enjoy the process.
Oh, I don't enjoy the process.
Like, peeling the tomatillos.
Oh, no, I don't want that process.
Yeah.
No.
But also, like, it's fucking delicious.
Yeah, okay, okay.
But, so when I got into roasted tomatillo salsa, I think that's when I kind of got out of the pico de gallo habit. But, like, they serve different functions. You could serve both of them. Like, you know, if you go to a Mexican restaurant, you'll probably get both types.
Yes, and I would want them for different things, for that matter.
Like what? Like, how would you use them differently?
Well, so I think of a pico de gallo as being, I mean, for me, because it is a lot about the texture, I particularly like it with chips, because chips are one texture, and then the pico de gallo has like lots of different textures within it, and a chip is a really good delivery vehicle for all these textures.
I like how you're saying all these things like they're novel observations.
Yeah, nobody's ever thought about like, this before.
You know what would be really good with this stuff? Chips.
But I don't think it ever occurs to me to do anything else with pico de gallo. Like, I imagine it would be delicious, especially on a seafood taco.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Or with seafood in general.
Yeah, like a pico de gallo, I want it more like on something rather than in something. So, I'm going to take home the rest of this unless you take it. And I'm probably going to make myself a quesadilla for lunch and, like, throw a bunch of it on top of the quesadilla.
Ooh, yeah.
Like, I don't want to put it in the quesadilla because, like, I don't want it to be cooked.
Right. You know, I'm thinking that, so do you remember a period in time, maybe in the early 2000s or late 90s,
yeah,
when serving fish like, with mango salsa was like all the rage?
Like around when Kid A came out?
Probably.
I do. I don't really have good feelings about mango salsa. I think like if it's made really well, like with lots of acid, it can be good.
Yeah. But anyway, I'm just thinking of that nice, like the acidic coolness of either pico de gallo or, you know, the old mango salsa and how nice that was with fish.
Yeah. If I could remember, I'm trying to remember which songs are on Kid A so I can like make some jokes. But
I don't remember the words to it, but everything in its right place.
Yeah. Like the mango salsa on top of the
wait
fish.
Wait a minute. Is that on?
I think it is. Wow. If we get like a Radiohead fact wrong, we're going to be in huge trouble on the internet.
Oh, no.
This episode is brought to you by Town Place Suites by Marriott.
Whether you're traveling for work or just enjoying a relaxing week away, Town Place Suites by Marriott has all the comforts of home.
Yeah, and if you're a Spilled Milk listener, we bet that sometimes you want to cook when you travel, and Town Place Suites by Marriott has a Weber grill on the patio. They've got a microwave, dishwasher, stovetop, full-size refrigerator. You are good to go.
In other words, Town Place Suites by Marriott has all the amenities you need to feel at home during your stay.
Find the comforts of home at Town Place Suites. Go there with Marriott Bonvoy. This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, this weekend, I took a class from somebody who I bet you admire as much as I do.
Okay, let me see it. Let me see if I can guess who that is. Denzel Washington.
No, so close, though.
Okay.
Margaret Atwood.
Okay, yeah, very similar.
Yes. So Margaret Atwood, she has a series of 23 classes on Masterclass.
23 classes.
And I only had time, honestly, to watch two of them. But one of the ones that I watched was about how she chose to write The Handmaid's Tale in first person, where she wrote Alias Grace from multiple points of view.
Wow.
And so it was so interesting to listen to her talk about like the feeling that she wanted the book to have and why a story should be told from this perspective or that one. Anyway, even though I'm a writer and I teach writing, I think this stuff would be fascinating even to people who just read the book. It was so great.
Yeah, I mean, Masterclass is for you. If you're like me, a bit of a prima donna, and you're like, I want to learn something, but I only want to learn from the best, you go to Masterclass. You can learn to think like a boss with Martha Stewart. You can learn to shoot three-pointers with Steph Curry. Like, if you imagine the person who's best at the thing you want to learn, they are probably already on Masterclass teaching how to do it.
That is accurate. And plus, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So, like, zero risk here. If you are a lifelong learner, and we certainly hope you are,
if you're a lifelong learner, why are you listening to this show? Instead, head over to Masterclass for an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Get 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
So, Matthew, how do I make this stuff? I used to be married to someone who really enjoyed making salsa, but usually made like a roasted salsa.
Yeah.
I have never been bitten by the salsa bug.
All right. Well,
and so tell me about, like, are there important things to think about?
Yeah. I mean, part of the reason I wanted to do this episode, by the way, this episode was suggested by host Matthew.
Okay. Great.
Is like to, like, if you haven't made this in a while or ever, just like to convince you to do it, because homemade really is going to be better than store-bought, even though store-bought can be very good. I think, like, starting with quality ingredients is important, but not super duper important, because it will still be good if you use supermarket tomatoes.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, but like, you know, if you can get good tomatoes this time of year, definitely get them and use them.
Although by the time this episode is coming out, it's going to be October.
But I don't know. Yeah. There are some places. Maybe,
yeah.
maybe you live in British Columbia and you have BC Hothouse tomatoes. Those are good year round.
What are you talking about?
It's a brand of tomato and other produce in British Columbia that made a big impression on me many, many years ago for some reason.
Oh, I love that. It's so cute. I looked over at you and you looked so satisfied.
Isn't it like BC Hothouse? It's like when we dubbed producer Abby's husband Hot Pots. It's just fun to say.
Yeah, BC Hothouse.
BC Hot Pots. Okay, so if you're going to make it, like, there's nothing more to it than, you know, dicing some tomatoes, onions, chilies, and, you know, throwing in whichever herbs and spices you like. I like cumin and garlic powder, plenty of salt, plenty of lime juice. But there are a couple things that I would recommend keeping in mind. The first is to remove excess liquid.
Okay.
So I will usually salt the tomatoes and let them drain for a little bit.
And do you scoop the innards out before you do that?
No, because I'm superstitious about that being where the flavor is, even though like it's going to drip out anyway. So I don't do that. And then let the flavors meld in the fridge. And then usually like after it's been in the fridge for a few hours, I will like partially drain it again. I don't want my pico de gallo to be like swimming in liquid.
I love the care you're taking with
Thank
this.
You.
When did you make this one, the one that we're eating now?
Yesterday afternoon.
Okay. Wow. All right. So it's like aged to perfection.
Yeah, I think so.
And what do you think is the ideal amount of like time before eating to make this
That's
stuff?
That's a good question. I like it to be pretty cold.
Okay. So you want it to, you would do it the day before?
I think.
Or the morning of?
Yeah. I think maybe like 4 hours is ideal for me.
Does it even get very cold in that time?
Something in the fridge can get cold in 4 hours.
Okay. Fair enough.
Not like totally ice cold, but yeah. I mean, is your fridge broken maybe?
No.
Like when you put stuff in your fridge and it's in there for hours, is it still kind of lukewarm?
No.
When you reach for the milk, has it become yogurt?
No.
Okay.
Oh my God. There was a week, I think it was a couple weeks ago, where literally over the course of an entire day, my spouse left an entire gallon of milk out on the counter three different times.
Oh.
And every time I would be like, hey, babe, are you doing something with the milk? And they'd be like, oh, God, not again. It just never stopped. It was like the day of milk on the counter.
Wow. But then things
went back to normal.
No, I think that, like, there's usually probably like some dumb thing that I'm doing repeatedly that I'll quickly move on to some other dumb thing.
Yeah.
I have another question. Is your refrigerator running?
Better go catch it. Oh, that was a good one. I love that you brought that back.
I have a follow-up question. Do you have Prince Albert in a can? Isn't it weird how, like, do kids these days still know that like, an old joke is, do you have Prince Albert in a can? Because, like, I don't think I knew what that meant
until
I was, like...
Who knows who Prince Albert is anymore?
I don't know who Prince Albert is. I know it's related to, like, pipe tobacco or something.
Yeah, I think there's a brand of tobacco called Prince Albert.
Right, but, like, it's totally weird that, like... Like, nobody buys a can of pipe tobacco. I mean, I know somebody does, but almost nobody. And nobody even makes that kind of joke anymore, and yet everybody knows it, right?
Yeah.
I've got cilantro in my throat.
All right. So, but, you know, our listeners, they probably know more than we do about this stuff at this point. So,
probably.
Do we have anything else to add? I mean, I feel like I've learned some things.
Yeah, no, I just like go make some fresh salsa. It's fun. It's fun to make. Like it's like a real meditative cooking process, I think, because you're chopping everything to approximately the same size. The colors are beautiful. It tastes great. You do have to be patient because it's not going to be at its best when you first make it. But like it smells good when you're making it and you get hungry and then you eat ice cream instead.
Fantastic. Love this.
Should we move on to segments?
Let's do.
Our first segment is Animal Crossing.
June hasn't played Animal Crossing in a while, and there you go.
Okay. I keep getting told that I would really enjoy this video game, Hades, that I'm sure some of our listeners are familiar with, but I haven't gotten around.
Like as in the god of the underworld?
As in the god of the underworld. It's like a Greek gods-themed dungeon crawling video game, I think.
Ooh, cool.
And so maybe I will give that game a try, and we can have a segment on what's going on in the underworld.
I would love that.
Okay.
Okay.
Let me make a note. I'm just going to write the word Hades on this agenda.
What's going on in the underworld? Let's see. Hold on. What's the segment?
I mean, I think what's going on.
We'll
get to it. What's going on? Okay. Here's what I'm going to write on my agenda here. What's going on in the underworld? And then later I'm going to pick up this piece of paper and I'm be like, what did I mean? Right?
Exactly.
And okay. I'm going to text you and I'm going to say, what is what's going on in the underworld mean? And you're going to be like, I don't know.
So, Matthew, I'm going to read the spilled mail today.
Please
because
do.
It's about cobblers. And I just made a cobbler yesterday.
Okay.
All right, here we go. So two listeners got in touch to tell us about Texas cobblers.
Yeah, I think this is something we mentioned on the cobbler episode, that the word cobbler has a different meaning in parts of Texas sometimes.
We did?
Well, I think we must have, because at least two people wrote in to give us information about Texas cobblers.
Okay, so first off, listener Janet. Hi, Molly and Matthew. You are so fun. Thank you, listener Janet. Thank you for your entertaining, somewhat informative, and witty podcast. It's everything I love. Oh, thanks. It's everything we love, too.
Yeah.
Especially being somewhat informative.
Somewhat informative, yes.
I listened to the cobbler episode specifically because I wanted to hear what you had to say about what Texans call cobbler. I'm from a town north of Austin. My whole life, we have referred to deep dish pies in a rectangular pan as cobblers. When Texans attend a barbecue in which a fruit-based dessert with a biscuit topping is served, most of us have a bless their hearts moment when we realize the host considers this a cobbler. Oh no, she would have a bless her heart moment seeing my cobbler.
Yep.
Okay. Alas, I literally awoke in the middle of the night years ago and realized with deep conviction that we, as in millions of people, are simply using the wrong terminology. Much like the horse made of metal, which Matthew referred to. What was that?
No idea.
Okay, cool. We love our deep dish fruit pies. So, okay, they're making a deep dish fruit pie and they're calling it a cobbler?
Yeah, but I mean, I don't think it's wrong for things to have like different overlapping regional names. That's just the spice of life.
So it's under a pie crust.
Yeah, it's under a pie crust.
Okay. Oh, I see listener Amy has written in about this
as
well. Hi, Spilled Milk. Just listen to your cobbler episode, and I can attest to the double-crusted cobbler that is common in the South. It's the only type of cobbler my mom and grandmother made. Our family in Texas makes it with a sort of pie crust that has a small amount of baking powder added for tenderness, but it's not biscuit-esque. The crust gets rolled out as you would with pie dough, then is cut into 1-inch-ish wide strips. I love the specificity here.
Yeah.
A third of the fruit mixture goes on the bottom, then a layer of dough strips, no lattice work, just one direction with about 1 inch between strips. Then another third of the fruit, another layer of dough strips, opposite direction this time. Sounds like we're basket making.
It does.
Last third of the fruit, then a lattice on top. The top gets dotted with butter and sprinkled with sugar. This is all in a Dutch oven or deep-ish rectangular baking dish. Love the show. Amy from Dallas, Texas.
The dough strips in the middle.
Do they get mushy? Like what the heck happens to those?
Maybe they get kind of slumpy. Because, I mean, like when you make a slump, that's like dough.
You know, listener Amy, well, frankly, and listener Janet, would you two be willing to write in again and send us some recipes that we could try? Because I think we need to experience this firsthand, and we are way up here in the Northwest, pretty far from Texas, and we're going to have to cobble ourselves.
We're going to have to cobble ourselves. Yeah, no, I would like to try a Texas-style cobbler. And yeah, I have no problem with the terminology. Like, you know, there's two kinds of oregano that are totally unrelated, but are both called oregano, and people deal with it.
Everyone can cobble themselves.
There's enough
cobbler to go around.
I hope that's true.
All right. You know, it's time for Now But Wow. All right. It's my week to do Now But Wow. And I can't believe I haven't recommended this before. I'm recommending a podcast called The Slowdown, which is unfortunately seems to be possibly on permanent hiatus
as
of October 2020. But they have
it slowed down too far.
Really, it came to a grinding halt. No, so The Slowdown is a podcast that was hosted by Tracy K. Smith, who's an American poet, and she was the 22nd poet laureate of the U.S.
Okay,
from 2017 to 2019. Anyway, she won the Pulitzer Prize. I mean, Tracy K. Smith knows what is what, and what she does on The Slowdown is makes a short daily show in which she kind of talks about poetry or about like life in general, and then reads a poem that has something to do with sort of the vibe of what she's been talking about.
Is it a poem that she wrote or that someone else wrote, or could be
somebody else's poem, poems that she has selected.
Okay.
And it runs a broad range, contemporary poets. I've encountered some poets that, you know, I learned about as like modern poets when I was like 16, people who were writing in the 50s or whatever. There's a whole broad span. I don't know if like John Donne and Ben Jonson are there, but
those are like really old poets.
Really old poets.
Okay.
But anyway, The Slowdown by Tracy K. Smith has a deep reservoir of back episodes, do we call it?
Yeah.
Or old episodes. Hundreds, even.
Old poet episodes.
Old poet episodes. And you should go check it out. It is, Tracy K. Smith has a wonderful, melodious voice. She chooses spectacular poems, and it feels like exactly what the title promises. Like, it's sort of calming, but not, like, pablum. It's a really beautiful, artful poetry podcast.
Let me ask a question. If you were someone hypothetically who doesn't know anything about poetry and may even be a little scared of poetry, would this be a good place to get your feet wet?
I think that you might find the opening music a little heavy-handed. I was just thinking, you know, I was listening to some old episodes on the way over here today, and I was thinking, you know, Matthew's going to hate the intro music.
But I mean, that's
this.
What the like 30-second skip button is for.
Sure. I think that this is a fantastic way to bring some poetry into your life, not only because Tracy K. Smith really sets it up beautifully, but also you're going to get introduced to a wide range of voices.
Okay,
so
that sounds great.
I think you should check it out. It's also a very short investment of your time. So make it a part of your daily life, even though who knows when the podcast will be making new episodes. There's plenty to enjoy.
Okay, that sounds great. The Slowdown.
The Slowdown, hosted by Tracy K. Smith.
Our producer is Abby Circatella. Please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. You can catch up with other people who listen to the show on Reddit at reddit.com/r/everythingspilledmilk.
Mm-hmm.
Anything yep. else to tell the people?
This is
airing there'll be one more episode before Halloween, so we can give our usual annual Halloween message next year. Next week?
Yeah.
Also next year.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So stay tuned next week for our rousing Halloween speech.
I can't wait to hear what it's going to be. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk.
The show that goes great with chips, because if you crunch them loudly enough, you won't have to listen to us.
I'm Molly Weisenberg.
And I'm Matthew Amster Burton.
Oh, God, your Pico looks really... I was trying to think of something that rhymes with Pico. Squeako. Oh, I smell the onions. I smell the cilantro. Should I eat some? Should I squeako your Pico?
Go for it.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.